Well, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Freeman's Podcast. Today, as you can tell, we have our Red Cup. We're going to be doing a Red Cup episode, and it's going to be a little more focused than in the past. We're going to be focused on The Hobbit. All of us just finished reading it, and we thought it was great, and thought you guys would enjoy some of our takeaways. So, yeah, let's get started.
So, the reason why we're specifically talking about the book is because we all belong to a book club.
Yes.
Titled The Men Who Read and Then Talk About It?
Yes.
Is that right? Or did I?
It's men who read books and talk about it.
Yeah.
Okay,
thank you. Justin's like, there's a name?
Well, he came after the name, remember?
Yeah, he came after that.
Yes.
So we all take turns picking a book.
Right. And so this one.
Bing, bing, bing.
The Hobbit.
Yeah, that was my choice.
Yep. Cam got that one.
And I don't know. I've read it before, but I wanted to read it again.
I had never read it. This is my first go with anything Tolkien.
Yep.
So, and all the guys are going to happiness and joy and good things. Yep. Yes.
Welcome to the real world, Joel.
Thanks. Right. Okay. So yeah. I just had an open question for you guys.
Okay.
It should be simple, but I have a feeling it's not going to be.
Okay. Nice.
Yep.
Way to set it up.
What is your favorite? Yeah. What was your favorite part of The Hobbit?
Oh, that's easy for me.
Okay,
that's easy. It's easy for you.
Go ahead.
It's riddles in the dark.
Really?
I love riddles in the dark.
Yeah,
that's one of my least favorite parts of the book.
It's one of the most. It has the most tension. I think it has the most gripping narrative that he writes easily. Just in the whole concept of. Like Frodo's running, but he's having to pursue Gollum.
You mean Bilbo?
Did I say Frodo? Bilbo. Yeah. Bilbo yeah. is he's chasing Gollum down these paths.
Which book did you read?
It's been a minute. but you have this. You kind of get to see the picture through the eyes. It's weird because you've got this thing where you're reading this through the lens and perspective of Bilbo. As you're following, tracing Bilbo, yet the whole thing is being kind of governed. The whole journey is being led by Gollum, who's trying to find his way out for the sake of the ring, without knowing the ring is right there. And every time I read it, I start to think about the fact that here are Bilbo and Gollum who are kind of locked together now, and they're partaking of the ring.
Yep.
In this weird sense. And so they're both kind of stumbling around in the dark, trying to find the way out. It's interesting.
It's also very Tolkien in the sense that like what the ring is and like what it represents, like right, like this embodiment of evil.
Yep.
But then the way that like Bilbo happens upon it.
Yes.
You know, and it's this very like kind of almost like whimsical, like, you know, I can't think of the right word, but it's almost kind of like unceremonial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's also like this game of riddles that's being played,
you know,
also over like basically the fate of the universe.
But neither of them know that at that time.
Yeah.
You know,
I like that how unceremonially he found it, right? Because I have this huge take on it as I've been reading through the rest of the Tolkien stuff since then, is that the ring represents responsibility that each of us have to take up the burden of fighting and destroying evil.
Okay, Jordan Peterson.
Interesting.
And so...
Well, it depends on what you mean by evil.
Yes. Thank you. No, but that's just like the thought I've had as I'm like reading, just finished the Fellowship of the Ring actually today. Mm-hmm. It's just like, here's Frodo, just a nobody. Bilbo was just a nobody.
Okay.
Oh, I was talking, yeah.
Yeah, I see
They're both just these, just they're comfortable in their homes. They're comfortable in where they live. And there's this situation. There's this great evil that has to be dealt with. And it's just the common everyday guy who just, you know what? That's my job. No one else is going to do it for me. And I'm going to pick it up and I'm going to find a way to get rid of it.
Well, that's debatable because they come from a long line of hobbits that like to go on adventures sometime.
Sometimes. Okay. Yeah, yes. Okay. It is debatable, but it, I think just...
I understand. I was just,
Trying for to sure. jab but at them. Anyway, so that's interesting. And yeah. That was a good take.
That's a good one. Riddles in the Dark.
So what's your favorite part?
Oh, gosh.
If you don't have it, do you have one?
Yeah, you go ahead. Because I want to make sure that this is my favorite.
I can't remember the guy's name. The shapeshifter.
Bayorn.
When they go to Bayorn's house. Yeah. Okay. My favorite part of the book.
It was just like... Oh, the cat, so like the good. Gradual introduction.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, so that classical. Was really good. Yes. It's so good.
So, yeah. Yeah. And like I did listen or did the like listen to it with, is it Andy Serkis?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
yeah.
Me too.
And like his like different voices of like each character. And yeah, just
that is one of my Bomber, favorite
parts. What about me?
Yeah, he just, Bomber just shows up because he's just like tired of waiting.
Yeah. Elevened. Yeah.
No, it was just a good part. And that just like the whole part of them like gaining his trust and him actually being like, I'm going to like provide for you guys and help you guys.
That's a good one.
That's a good choice. A really good I also one. Think that one of the things that I love about The Hobbit in general, but I think that scene like epitomizes it, is that The Hobbit feels like one of these stories where it's like anything could happen, right? Like there's not, and maybe it's because of the order he wrote it in, but there's less like rules for things. So it's just like you're reading the story. And it's just like giant eagles. And then it's like also shape-shifting bear man who can talk to horses and has giant bees. And why wouldn't that be in the story?
Right.
You know? And so it's kind of like this fun. Like,
but then behind it all, there's that looming threat of a dragon. That's
But it's like when he wrote this book, there weren't like a lot of knowledge. Or, I mean, there wasn't really any knowledge on what a hobbit was.
Yeah.
And so he's just describing it like halfway, like, or right in the beginning. It's like, oh, wait, I didn't tell you what a hobbit was.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then here's what they are. But then also, like, the idea of goblins was already kind of probably out there. Mm-hmm. The idea of dragons was already out there. Mm-hmm. Shape-shifting bears. Like, but it's just the fact that, like, again, like, anything could happen because we're starting with something that doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. And I'm showing you what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
that's a good one.
Yeah, it is a good
one.
I
love that part. I would say, I mean, that's definitely up there for me, but I'll give a different answer since you got that one.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, I mean, longer section in the book is the party at the beginning of the book where Thorin and company is created.
Yes.
But one
of the most entertaining and in a homey sense, in a very hobbit holy sense.
Oh yes, it's great. Yeah. Now I was gonna say I wouldn't want to spend too much time on that because that is like a more typical answer. But one of my favorite like small moments in the book is the moment where Bilbo sees the eagles coming in the Battle of Five Armies.
Oh yeah,
and like that moment of like when he sees like the sun is like red and it's like going down. And then, like, just barely off in the distance, which only Bilbo can see because, like, he has the best vision until the elves get alerted to the eagles. But it's like he just sees them coming off in the distance. And it's, like, the hope that then fills, like, him in, like, this total moment of despair.
Right.
Is just, like, there's some moments, I'll say this, in The Hobbit that are a little over, like, they're kind of just, like, ABC, like it's like this happened and then
it's
this
a child,
happened.
It's
and
a children's
this, right,
book.
And it's written for children.
Right.
But then there are some moments where it's like his like writing game was like ratcheted up a notch. And I think like the Riddles in the Dark section is a really good example of that. And like that moment at the end, like with the Battle of Five Armies is just like very captivating.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to that point and then it's like he sees the eagles and it's like you, like as I'm reading it, it's like I feel like that feeling of hope. Coming like of just like yes no like this it's not over
you know?
And it's that's a good one. What about you, Joel, since you asked the question?
Well honestly I think some of the parts that stood out the most, and it started at the very beginning, was when the dwarves sing their Misty Mountain song. I love, and I've loved it in other books I've read, of just how cultures used to imbue into song their deepest, most cherished history and memories, especially like, you know, the Anglo-Saxons, which are a huge influence on Tolkien's works. it was just how they honored the dead. It's how they remembered their history, how they remembered homeland. They remembered the great loss. And then in the book, when the dwarves sing it there in Bilbo's Hobbit hole, it's just like chills. Mm-hmm. Like, man, these guys have been through it, yeah. and they're going to go back and they're going to fix it. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I just love that.
Yeah, that's a good one. And you see it like you have the same perspective that Bilbo has in that moment when you're reading it, because like he doesn't know these people and he doesn't know their history. Neither do you.
But so he feels like moved.
Right.
But
he feels moved by like how powerful it is.
And I think, and there's something interesting there to be said. Cam, I know you study this like as a historian.
Oh God, he's going to say something. I'm like, what?
No, but just like when we talk about like the philosophy of history and historiography and why we study history and then how you should approach studying history, there seems to be this overemphasis on the fact that if something is as objective as possible, it's more true. Hmm. Right. Basically, like we've conflated objectivity with truth. And I think that in a sense, if you're going to portray history in a manner worthy of remembering it, which I think song is one of the best ways to do that.
Yeah.
Because it's there is a degree of romance about everything that has passed.
Mm-hmm. So Gabe,
hold on, let me finish my thought. And so then if you allow that degree of romance to be remembered through history, you run the risk of being objective, of inserting emotion and opinion and thought and the sense of right and wrong, like in the recounting of the dwarves' history. There was within it an expectation that we're going to go back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That they were recording their past and at the same time letting you know what they thought about
that's
it.
That's the line of we must away by break of day.
Yeah, right.
To claim our long forgotten gold. Right.
And I think history doesn't have to be objective to be true.
Yeah. What are you going to say?
I was just going to say, off of that argument, would.
Do we want to?
We all know just start arguing
already, or are we going to waste?
This is the opening question.
Yeah. For that argument, this doesn't have to do with the book. would you like encourage that? Like universities should start like doing historical choir.
Historical choir,
to where they have to like teach historical songs that teach that like it's only history that they find like in songs.
If you can, and then you learn recreate the ballads and the sagas.
I think every historian should have a degree of appreciation
such
for art.
Oddly specific.
It is, and I just had this ridiculous thought of these college students singing about the dropping of the atomic bomb on Hiroshima.
No. Yeah. I'm talking like actual like passed down through generation, like so, hey, that song.
I can answer
your question.
To make art, there has to be a certain degree of passion.
Yeah.
No, I'm not saying make it. I'm saying like teach history through that class, through learning those songs.
You missed my point entirely.
Okay,
my point.
Cool. He missed it. We don't have to get into it. Let's get into a question.
So yes, you can teach it because that's what historians would call cultural history.
You got to go first since this was your book.
Okay.
Stirring it up.
Class,
drum roll.
I think it should be integrated in every class about every culture. You should teach song,
music,
and art
math.
From a civilization. But you say. Okay, question. What was the greatest danger faced in The Hobbit? It looks like this person spelled Hobbit with A as the first letter, so it's like Obbit. But faced.
Did you write it, Cam?
I did not write this.
So what was the.
I know we're supposed to guess.
What was the greatest danger?
Did they write an answer?
Nope. And, I don't know who wrote this, but I suppose interpret that however you please, what the greatest danger faced is.
I would say the greatest danger was probably in Mirkwood when Bomber falls into the Enchanted River.
Okay, so that probably caught my breath more than, I'm putting air quotes because it didn't actually happen, but that was like, what's about to happen?
It's in a moment where, because it's kind of just assumed, there's no way out of this, I guess. mm-hmm. that this is it. This is it. They're going.
I don't know. Bomber seemed to enjoy it.
Bomber's having a great
time.
Said
at the end of the book, he keeps trying to go back to sleep to try and get the dreams back that he had.
Which I would do. I mean, with all of them, there's a way out. Like in the mountains, you when they were with the Goblin King, Gandalf was there. He was with mm-hmm. them in the cave. So it's like Gandalf was somewhere. We don't know, mm-hmm. but he's there. And at every turn, like with the trolls, like you knew he was there. But in Mirkwood, Gandalf was nowhere to be found. He had explicitly left them. They were lost in the woods. Mm-hmm. Like that was the moment where, as the reader, that is for the company, that is rock bottom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So. And it is, I mean, you make a great point. Like, I feel like that is part of the thing that's, I guess, good about taking Gandalf out of the narrative at that point, because it's kind of like when Gandalf's around, he's sort of like the fix all button.
He takes
care of the situation.
That was easy.
He's gone and like, well,
yeah,
we have to do this ourselves. Yeah. And for Bilbo specifically,
yeah, doesn't like Bilbo cry at Mirkwood when he realizes that's when Gandalf's about to leave?
Yeah.
Doesn't he start crying?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's right. And yeah, I don't know, I've been in that place with dreams. Just let me go back to sleep. That was a good dream.
Yeah. Love Bomber.
It's good.
I don't know. If I were to say like the greatest danger they faced, honestly, I think it had to do, and this is more for the dwarves, it was getting their gold back. I think the greed. Like
the dragon?
What?
You mean like there's the dragon?
Oh, you mean running the risk?
No,
of
not
greed.
The dragon. They finally get possession of their gold, the greed that it just consumes. Yeah, the dragon sickness. I think that was probably the greatest danger because it almost ruined everything that they had just worked so hard for.
You stole my answer.
Did I really?
I thought I was gonna be all smart and all like C.S. Lewis about it, and like the biggest danger is inside of you, you know? And then but no, that's a good one. Justice, do you have one?
Well, like, so like obviously the biggest danger is the ring, but this book is not about the ring.
Yes, right.
So you don't really see that affect this story whatsoever. I mean, you see that in later books, but obviously in my opinion it's the ring. But like for this book, I would have to say it's definitely Smaug, the dragon, because if he is not killed and he does not share through pride his one weakness that he has or show his underbelly or however he actually is exposed to it, or is it the bird that tells him
the bird is involved. So Bilbo like entices him into showing himself to Bilbo, to show himself off, and he sees a weakness.
Oh,
Bilbo
Smaug,
tells the dwarves,
great and terrible.
And then the bird hears it and tells Bart.
So because if the dragon is not killed in The Hobbit, he would have gone on a rampage and not only killed like those that are around him, but also like, I mean, I just don't think he would have just stayed in the mountain. Like
probably would have become a servant of Sauron.
I mean, the second answer I would have said the necromancer, but like compared to the dragon at that point, I think Smaug has grown into a more full grown adult dragon, who has become much more powerful, especially like the powers that they gain. But that's my answer. Smaug is definitely the biggest.
Yeah, and I know you've like read the Silmarillion, which I have not. So there's a lot more to dragons than what happened in The Hobbit. So that's fair.
That was why I made that smirk earlier when you like looked at me. Was that? So just because I've listened to the books over and over and over again, I've gotten to the point where I'll just fast forward all of the songs. So like when I was listening to The Hobbit this time, and he was talking about how great it was, I was like, oh yeah, I just
skipped the songs. That's hilarious.
Because it's just like, especially like, I don't know, Andy Serkis singing is like,
he's not a great singer.
There's a couple of the songs I think he does really well.
The song,
especially when they do the elf song.
Oh, dude, the elf song when they come back to Rivendell at the end of the book.
Okay, I haven't gotten that far yet.
The Hobbit?
Oh, The Hobbit.
Wait a second. The song that they sing about the dragon being dead and everything that happened, that one, like, I'm not even going to lie, little tears started to get going there. I was like, oh, this is so good.
Anyways, what's the greatest
danger movie? You guys like basically took all the answers.
Maybe I should have just stuck to one versus.
I don't really have a good answer, so I'll say the greatest danger was Bilbo deciding to leave the Shire or not. And had he not, they would have been completely screwed. Toast.
Literally.
Literally. There you go. Picking
them. Oh, it's my turn?
Yeah, your turn.
If it's a fairly straightforward question, we could do this one as like a quick one.
Yeah.
But if it's not, we can go deeper.
Quick or long? You pick. Reader picks.
Okay, what does the story teach us about the call to adventure? We can keep this one pretty short, I think.
Mm.
Teach us about the call to adventure?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That there is a responsibility. And that we all have normal lives, but we as normal people are called higher to have an adventure.
Mm.
I mean... Yeah, I'm going to keep it short.
Yeah. I think just on that, I think God calls all of us, and just as men, I think specifically us men, to responsibility. Mm. And that is the adventure of our lives. When we take up our responsibility as he's laid it out, as he's created us to be able to bear. And then that is the uncomfortable, oh, I wish I was back in my bed, which Bilbo is constantly saying all the time. Mm-hmm. That is that part of our lives that is the adventure, is the danger, the challenge, the how do I get my friends over the dangerous water through Mirkwood, away from the spiders, you know, how do I get into the place with the dragon? How do I help slay the dragon? All those things, that's us, that's our responsibility, and I think that's our call from God.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. I think Joel wrote this question.
Yeah, I think so too.
I very much agree with you, Joel, because I think I think you can see the lie of the serpent in culture being the fact that being conflating the call to adventure and disassociating call to adventure and responsibility, basically making them two separate things.
Yeah,
because to your point. Responsibility is the call to adventure. Mm-hmm. They are the same thing.
Yeah.
And culture presents it to you as if you can have one, you can have boring responsibility, or you can have call to adventure, which is just the reckless abandonment of all responsibility.
Yeah.
But then if biblical masculinity is the glad assumption of sacrificial responsibility, and that is an adventure in and of itself.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, that makes responsibility, we live according to responsibility for the sake of adventure.
And I think especially in our culture today, men are starving for that. They want that adventure. They were created for it. And I love that there is a pile of gold at the end because there is reward for taking up your responsibility.
Exactly.
Yeah. Might have to fight for it like in the Battle of Five Armies, but there is a reward.
Well, we were having a conversation earlier about this. And that like, I heard that a quote that was apparently like said, I think it was Socrates said that, we were talking about this earlier,
most excellent. Sorry.
I think it's like wonder is the beginning of wisdom, which is very close to the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom and knowledge.
Awe and wonder of God.
So awe and wonder of God.
Interesting.
Wonder,
yeah.
But then wonder to also wonder onto like a quest or into like, what is actually out in the world? Can I figure out things? And then like quest, like goes into questions because quest is like the root definition for the word question.
Interesting.
So it's like, if you actually can take up the questions that you are faced with in life, then it's like, that's where the wisdom actually is found. Yeah. But I mean, there's definitely like layers deep of actually like the heart that's put into fearing God. Versus just being like, as a secular man, that I can, without God, I can just figure out my way. It's like there's definitely still the spiritual side of it.
Mm. Well, I think like to your point, when we go and wander, not wander like stray, but wander in the sense we're in pursuit of answers to our questions. When that's done in light of respect and awe for God, we can actually see those questions and those answers more clearly.
Yeah. And the, cause it was brought to my attention by Jordan Peterson that like the root of question was quest, but he was talking about like, it's not a matter of like you being able to have questions. It's a matter of like, again, as he always points out, that like, is your aim aligned correctly? Like, what is what's behind the questions you're asking?
Yeah.
And that, like,
that's very important.
And it matters, because it's like, like, I think he was like a quote that he like is starting to say is like how you actually align your aim, like, will actually like dictate how your prayers are answered. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if I agree with that, but it does, like,
I had to think about that.
Yeah, but it does lead into the, like,
well,
the
sounds an awful lot like delight yourself in the Lord, he will give you the desires.
Yeah.
So I understand that, like, in my opinion, that Jordan Peterson is definitely becoming more and more like
religious
or more and more like touching on topics and
faith
and
stuff.
I think that he's like figuring out things, but I think as far as like relationship with God, I haven't heard, but again, it's not my responsibility.
We don't need to even know that today. Yeah. But no, that is good. That's a good point.
Yeah. So I wanted to touch on a thing, and I'm going to read part of the book.
Okay.
To make my point. So I think, what was the purpose of adventure? The meaning of
it? What does it teach us about the call to adventure?
What does it teach us about the call to adventure? So I think, so there's a line or like a little section at the end of the book where Gandalf and Balin visit Bilbo in the Shire.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite parts.
And they're updating him on just like what's happening in the world and Erebor, and they're just like enjoying each other.
Yeah.
And like, so, and like the line I'll eventually read is like, Bilbo's like, oh, so the prophecies, which is like talked about earlier in the book, have come true about everything that's going to happen. And then Gandalf like explains to him like this dynamic of his involvement in the venture. And I think it, like, for me, like what I found profound about this part in the book is it's like part of the reason why like adventure is important is because there are like forces that are at work in the world. And depending on which one you're like listening to, you know, that's calling you into that adventure, you're partaking in a larger story than just your own.
That's good.
There's like things that need to happen that have been designed for you to be the one to make them happen.
Yeah.
And if you don't answer the call to adventure, then you're saying no to that. And then lots of things can happen because of that. But so I was just going to read very quickly, because just a few lines. So this is Bilbo's reaction and what they're telling me. He says, "Then the prophecies of the old songs have turned out to be true after a fashion," said Bilbo. And then, "Of course," said Gandalf. "And why should they not prove true? Surely you don't disbelieve the prophecies because you had a hand in bringing them about yourself. You don't really suppose, do you, that all your adventures and escapes were managed by mere luck, just for your sole benefit? You are a very fine person, Mr. Baggins, and I am very fond of you, but you are only quite a little fellow in a wild world after all." And then Bilbo says, "Thank goodness." And he handed him the tobacco jar. And then the book ends.
That is, I really like that.
Go ahead. I would like to point out too that, like, on this question, that Bilbo's not the only one that actually takes up the responsibility of adventure, but the hobbits, I mean the dwarfs, are as well, because it's like their land and it's like their kingdom and it's like their family. It's like,
that's true, but I would draw a distinction even between Bilbo and the dwarves, because for the dwarves it's not just a call to adventure, for them it's more a call to duty.
Like their responsibility side of
it. Right, but for Bilbo, and I guess that would still hold.
I just was wanting to point it out.
Yeah,
That's good.
Well, I think there is a dynamic to like to Gabe's point, right? Where it's like part of the story with Bilbo is that he doesn't have a stake in what's happening, but he's being called
until
to
he
it
signs
anyways.
The contract.
Until he signs the contract. Yeah, but you know, so it's like this kind of like dynamic of like selfless sacrifice of saying like you're doing all of this for other people, not yourself, right? Not your own kin, not your own race.
And I'm just thinking about that, like that moment he sleeps in the book, and he does in the movie too. And you just have this picture of where he just is like, yay, they're gone. But then it just kind of settles in the back of his head. He's like,
So it doesn't sit right with him.
Yeah, this isn't right that I'm just sitting here. And he just takes off.
Yeah.
And he leaves comfort behind.
Gandalf shows up and he's like, what are you doing? You're late.
Oh, yeah,
and then
he's like,
and then he just like,
because he's eating breakfast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like that scene from the movie, The Fellowship of the Ring.
You good, Justice?
Where Gandalf is just looking at Frodo, is like, if you're referring to the whole incident with the dragon, all I merely did was give your uncle a nudge out the door.
Yeah.
So whose chicken scratch is this?
Real quick.
It's mine. I can read it.
We're not doing the red cup correctly yet. Who do we think did those first two questions?
I think you did that last one.
You did that one.
Yeah, you definitely
did. That was my last
one. I think the fear one was Gabe.
Yeah.
Nope.
It was also you.
It was me.
Yeah.
Like, how did my questions get first? Yeah. Dang it.
All right, let's read that for us.
Yes, I can.
My guy, this one's Gabe.
This is a, This is a book-centered question. Nice. What was the most shocking deviation or change from your experience of The Hobbit to reading Lord of the Rings?
Oh, interesting. So you're bringing in the other books.
From The Hobbit to the book, just books.
Yeah, so...
What do you find to be the most jarring differences in reading The Hobbit and reading the Lord of the Rings books?
You're asking this, Justin, Joel?
All of us. All of us.
Okay, I can start the maturity.
But considering Joel has just read and started to read both for the first time,
mm-hmm.
I think you will have the most sharp insight on this.
Perhaps. Justice is much more of a nerd when it comes to it, so. Sorry.
I would say like... like just the most like shocking difference between the Hobbit is like, you know, like less in size than one of the individual books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean,
so it's like there's, yeah, it's like you can even see the difference.
Yeah.
But it's like just the depth that Tolkien puts into each of the books, mm-hmm. especially because he wanted the Silmarillion to actually be printed with all three of them.
Right.
So it was like, he was like, here's four books. And this first one is like equal and like greater than the latter three.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so that's like, to me, the most shocking, just like the maturity for how he just like upped it. And it was like, oh, this is also for mm-hmm. adults and not just children.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like sometimes there are some parts of the book where you're like, let's get going. Like, I understand why this is here and this is important, but like he definitely like flushes out like the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
I would say for me, sorry.
I didn't know who was going for a second. There you go.
Just some of the things I think that have stood out to me is, again, The Hobbit is a children's book.
Mm-hmm.
Lord of the Rings is not. And I think some of the, like, as Justice was just talking, like, The Lord of the Rings really starts painting darkness as dark.
Mm.
Like the enemy is evil for not just evil's sake. They're evil with malice. They want people to suffer. They take pleasure in it. And so
just wait till you read the Silmarillion.
Right. Tolkien is painting. It's much more serious. The danger is much more real. Like just in the Fellowship where they're trying to get away from the Ringwraiths, there's just so much more danger involved and so much more challenge to, do we trust Strider or not? But in The Hobbit, we have this quest. We have literally the East Road. We have this straight road and the bad guys, they have a lot more dialogue with the bad guys. There's more things to laugh about from the goblins or the, mm-hmm. like the whole scene with the trolls.
It's amazing.
It's almost a joke.
It is. It's written and it's right. It's written like that because it's for kids. But in Lord of the Rings, you're not getting that. You're getting Boromir is pierced with many arrows, and he's lying against a tree, worried he'd failed his country. And
the trees are eating us.
Yeah. So I think. Don't get me started with the Barrowdowns and Tom Bombadil and all that.
Oh yeah, dude.
But
Barrowdowns are freaky.
Yeah, that was. I was like, man, I don't like this. But you don't get stuff like that in The Hobbit. The closest thing you get to that is the spiders. Yeah.
This is crazy that this is your first time reading them, because it's like you're getting to see like all the things that aren't in the movies.
Yeah.
And you're like, what is this? Like,
well, I knew a lot of the stuff I didn't know how it would play out, but I knew a lot of it was in the books versus the movies.
Yeah.
Because I've just had so many people over the years tell me. But yeah, I'd say those are my biggest, like, those are the sharpest contrast to me, is you really can tell it's children, fun, lighthearted. Yeah, there's danger and adventure, but Lord of the Rings is like a lot of danger, a lot of adventure. The responsibility taken up is real.
Mm. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the biggest difference to me is, I think, less so the depth, and I think more so the, and this is where I think Tolkien shows his mettle as a writer, is being able to establish a flavor of the book. Like books have flavor, and they have their own aroma, like, if you will, to use like a sense that's not necessarily tangible, but it's perceived, right? Like if you read the Narnia books.
Their own vibration?
Like, sure, their own vibe. Yeah, exactly. That's a great way of putting it, yeah. But like The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe has a different flavor.
Hey, this is
vibes,
Tolkien, but, not Lewis.
But I'm using that as an example. Like, it's like The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe is a very different book from The Silver
They're
Chair.
They're all very different.
And there's purpose behind that.
Yeah,
that is a whole other podcast that I will make you guys read a book about.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's my turn.
Yeah.
But you get that with The Hobbit. And I think it becomes so stark and so clear that Tolkien wrote each of these books with a very specific purpose in mind.
Yeah.
Like, he wrote The Hobbit with this intent of writing a fun story that had all the elements of a great fairy story.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Right? There was tension, there was danger, there was fear, there was despair.
Goblins and trolls and dragons.
But he also wanted to have a certain degree of brevity, right? And lightness and joviality a little bit.
Yeah, one of my favorite lines is, you already brought up the trolls, is just where he talks about they start arguing, and then he says, like, he describes what they say about each other, and then he says, like, perfectly accurate. Like, it's, I couldn't find the exact line, but it's like perfectly accurate descriptions of one another, and they're just insulting each other.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's like moments like that, just like it's meant
witty,
to be fun.
It's
and
witty too. Right. Like, and that's what you get, is you get that this is not the same book.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's a very different piece of literature entirely. It just happens to share environment and realm.
So the way I look at it, and I think this is right, I think this was his intent, is that, right, like, I think Tolkien, I know this is the case with The Lord of the Rings and The Silmarillion, which that one's a whole different thing because his son published it, so there's some, like, debate with that, but all of the books are supposed to exist as if they exist within Middle Earth itself.
Yep.
So, like, the Lord of the Rings books are like an account of the War of the Ring, written by someone like within the world, right? And it's like the Silmarillion is like all of these different stories that have been like passed down over time about these different events. And so the way I kind of look at it is, it's like those are very much these like historical, like almost like compilations of things. Whereas like the Hobbit,
the version of the Iliad and the Odyssey,
right? It's like Iliad, the Odyssey, that kind of thing. Whereas like the Hobbit is like something that one specific person wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Like a story about their ancestors.
Yeah, Bilbo's story.
Right.
Right.
And it's like you could almost imagine it had been pinned by like Frodo talking about his uncle. So it has like this perspective of like,
it's a perspective of
personal.
In the Fellowship at Bilbo's birthday party when he's sitting down and he's telling the story to the kids about like trolls, you know, he's getting excited and there's like that sense of, okay, this is a joke. He's doing this for the children, right? Like, it is a transcription of one of those accounts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's really cool.
That's my headcanon.
I like
that. It might just be canon, because I think...
I'm going to adopt that as my headcanon.
I'll pull another one, but Gabe had to read mine.
Did Gabe not pull one?
Gabe did pull one, but then he had to read.
Well, he read
go
two.
For it again.
Did I read
I had two? That beginning one.
Yeah, you did read the one you're supposed to read, and the one that Justice couldn't.
Oh yeah,
and that was yours.
Oh yeah, that's right.
I'm just making sure you can read all these words.
This is Cam's.
Yeah, it is. But I don't know if it's mine or Andrew's.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
So there's two questions in here that Andrew had us write because he could not be with us.
If you need a hand,
which character in this book do you think has the most potential to start a successful business, and what would it be?
Yes, okay.
That's Andrew.
Oh,
that's,
yeah. Easy.
Yeah.
Easy.
Andrew.
Who's or the... Ori and Nori can start a Tinderbox business.
Who's the older dwarf?
Balin. I was going to say Balin too, but for different reasons.
I was going to say it for different reasons. He's the one Balin that came to mind.
Because he's great.
Yep.
I don't know.
Love this.
He'd come up with some kind of trading business just with Dale and stuff.
Hey,
stop.
What
the heck?
Anyways.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to think about it. Like, what kind of business would exist in Middle Earth?
Okay. The way I read this was like, exist in our world.
Our world? Oh.
But it doesn't say that. So you interpret it.
Yeah,
it doesn't. Yeah, you can say Middle Earth, but I was thinking our world with answers.
Interesting. I'll think about that. Do you have one?
I got one. Okay. I'm going to say Bilbo. And I think...
Used car salesman?
No. It would be that he would sell his cakes.
That baker.
In the beginning of the book, because every freaking time I read the book and it talks about the cakes, I want them. Yep. I don't know what they are, but I'm like, I want these cakes. Because he talks about just they're just everywhere. He's just got tons and tons of cakes. And I'm just like
honey cakes, oat cake. You know, it's probably just like granola.
Yeah, it's probably like, some dumb mind, British just like, slop.
It's
you know?
Like this lovely...
Like, it's a cake, and turns out it's like pudding, you know? Right. With a cracker on top. Like, it's a cake, isn't it?
Biscuit.
Yeah.
You want some tea? Really just put some dirt in some water and boil it for a few minutes.
You know, I think I have an idea, too. It would be Bilbo, in our world, selling... priceless artifacts that may or may not have been burglarized.
Mm.
Oh, so he's like one. He's a Pawn Star.
Yes.
Yeah. He's Rick Harrison from Pawn Stars, and he comes in and he's like, "Nah, that didn't come from Smog directly.
No,
nope. Fake.
I've been there. Not it.
Yep.
Honestly, like Gandalf in our world.
Okay."
But I think he would
fireworks,
be
like, psychedelic mushrooms.
No,
no, he'd be a central banker. He'd be in charge of like J.P. Morgan or something.
I think he would have a podcast, and he would just be like,
"That's an insult to Gandalf, dude. Holy cow!
Like, well, that's an insult to us."
He would be like the number one watched podcast in the world.
He would be.
I could honestly
like just
see.
Imagine you watching a podcast, and there's just this old man with this huge white
beard and the bushy eyebrows,
and he just always is in like a gray cloak. Like,
so here's a follow up question: if Gandalf has a podcast,
what's it called?
What advertisements does he have on his podcast?
Fireworks,
Peterson tobacco,
mushrooms.
Peterson tobacco, yeah.
Books,
tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
And flashlights.
Nice.
I like that.
Thanks.
Yeah. I mean,
that was dumb.
Tannerite. He's sponsored by Tannerite.
There you go.
All right.
Could you imagine a Bilbo or Gandalf doing a? And this episode is brought to you by Tannerite. Mm-hmm. Blow up that stump with amazing work.
That's good.
Well done.
That was very well done.
What an ad read. Joel, when are you going to get sponsors?
Yeah, seriously. I don't
know. It's 18 months.
Okay. 18 months?
You're coming up on it then.
I don't know. Getting there. Okay, so why can't y'all write?
Is it me?
Probably.
Nope, not me.
That's okay, it's you?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay,
no,
sorry.
Really,
it's just really, really small
up.
And like messed up all over the place.
Yeah, well... Okay, to be fair, this is also Andrew's question, and he wrote, like, books of questions.
Are you telling me that you write, your handwriting's different for, like...
No, I'm just saying it's a lot of words on
you're like,
this is going to be Andrew,
this is my
so
question.
And I had that,
my
for
habits.
The record, I condensed this question.
Okay.
It was even longer in the text.
Okay.
Thanks a lot,
you
want to
just pull your phone out and read the text?
No.
Okay.
All right. What flaws are shown in the characters of the book? I think you said the main characters, I guess.
Okay.
And how are they solved? Or are they dealt with at all?
Oh, question: this is good. Do we want this to be a long or short answer? Like,
I don't
how about
know.
Pick because he asked a broad question, like, what are the flaws of the main characters? Mm-hmm. Instead of trying to pick several of them, just pick a character and run with that.
Yeah,
will the flaw for him? I had like Thorin, his pride. And it is totally solved. Like, he, you can see how haughty he is, which I think Tolkien does a good job of, like, showing he is nobility, just having this air about him and this arrogance. And it keeps biting him in the butt throughout the story. And even at the end, before his cousin Dane shows up, he's about to have to give in because of his pride. But then after the battle, he's wounded. You see just this humility that overcomes him to call Bilbo because he wants to make things right and wants to die as a friend. And so I would say with Thorin, you just, yeah, you have his pride, but it, he really becomes the leader he's supposed to be at the end.
In death.
Well, in death, but even right before, when he's like finally like, okay, I'm going to go out and fight the battle that is my battle, my mess. So
I would say Smaug.
Okay.
Does he have any flaws?
What's his flaw and does it get fixed?
He does.
He gets shot.
Prideful. And,
he ends up falling because of that pride.
So it doesn't get fixed.
I honestly was about to say Gollum, but I was like...
What'd you say? What'd you say?
We could keep going.
No, how about
we
don't
keep going?
Okay.
I think
you're not gonna get asked back on.
I think you will pick it up on the mic. You'll be able to hear it.
Yeah.
I think. I think that. I mean, it sounds cheesy to say Bilbo, but I do think that he obviously. I think he, the whole point of his character
He's
is to
the Hobbit for a reason,
right? But the whole point of his character is to telegraph change, you know, and, and growth. And I think in him you see that. It was similarly where Thorin was prideful to his death, to his fault. I think Bilbo was had a lack of self-confidence that that served him, I think.
I don't know if it served him. When he finally started overcoming his lack of it is when he finally started helping people, especially in Mirkwood, because that's really when it hits, when he realizes he has a, something to add and give.
I think his humility. I think his humility is what probably allowed him.
Well, that's different. Humility is different than lack of self-confidence.
Self-confidence. That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
And I think he did overcome his lack of self-confidence.
I would agree. I think he did.
Yeah, because he finally like he
as
goes through
as
it.
As much as anyone can.
Yeah, but he goes through it. He starts getting better in Mirkwood. He starts realizing he has things to offer, really help people, and then they get to the mountain, and he has the courage to go in there with Smaug.
Yeah,
three times.
Yeah,
and a contract forcing him to do so.
Yeah, but he's also a man of his word. He's like, I mean, I could break the contract.
But I mean, also like later on, like when he is.
He leaves like, the camp and stuff.
When he leaves the camp and he gives the Arkenstone and like says, I don't even need the gold. Like, I just want people to be taken care of.
Yeah.
Like, and I want you, like, he's also doing it for the dwarfs because he sees that they're blind. Like,
and they're friends. And he's, so like, definitely you see that throughout most of the book, his lack of self-confidence, but you can see how it just, when he's put between the rock and the hard place, he overcomes.
Yeah.
Nice. Cam? I think that my answer is going to be Bomber, because Bomber is the fattest of the dwarves, and Tolkien will not let you forget that, because every time his name comes up in the book, he's like, the fat one. And you know, he's always fat. Like, it's Bomber, the fattest of them, you know, or like, he fell in the water because he was fat.
So
you know, like, he never
obesity.
Can't let that lie.
Yeah.
However, I think that Bomber does deal with his issue of being
He fat. Does. Doesn't the end of the book say he's three times larger than he was?
Well, the beginning of the book says that he eats a salad in Bilbo's house. So he was dealing with this problem long before the journey ever got started. The
salad didn't help.
And I think that Bomber needs to be commended.
He was trying to slim down.
He
a
tried.
Bit.
He tried. He put the effort in.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
There you go. That's my answer.
All
right, is it my turn again?
I'm
going
to try.
Try.
I'm
going
to try to get one. Nice. See if I can read it.
That's me.
It's Gabe's.
It's me.
Thoughts? Thoughts on?
Oh yeah, this was fun.
Is this a movie one?
No, this is.
This
is gonna be thought provoking.
You're gonna have to read that, bro.
Okay.
Nice.
So essentially, the premise of this is thoughts on Tolkien's approach and use of racial conflict, specifically at the Battle of Five Armies.
Say it again.
Thoughts
on Tolkien's approach and use of racial conflict and division as a dividing line in specifically at the Battle of Armies.
I mean, yeah, I think it's
this
very
is a heavy question.
It is a very heavy question.
Like, but I think a fair question.
I think that like inside my thoughts on it is that the races are so different in Middle Earth than and like what you may consider races today, because we're all human. We're all of the human race.
Right. Yes, mm-hmm. Right. And
but
that's
then
why
in that though, it's like there are dwarfs, there are elves, there are orcs, there mm-hmm. are goblins. Well, actually, there are no orcs.
Yeah.
And but and
see, that was also really confusing. The goblins and the orcs keep getting called the same thing, and I thought they were two different things.
No, they are. He uses them interchangeably. In
okay. Yeah, and in Lord of the Rings. That's where I started.
No, no, not Lord of the Rings.
He fixes that in Lord
they're
of the Rings.
Very specific.
He
doesn't.
No, you go read. You should go read.
It's in the appendices. You need to read the appendices. It's
okay.
Explicit.
Anyways.
You should go read Beren and Luthien, and you'll be even more confused about
yeah, let's go,
what he
let's
calls
go read
things.
The very saddest story ever written.
No, it's not.
It's beautiful.
It is beautiful and is the greatest love story in all of
They don't
Tolkien.
Get to be with each other.
Have you read it?
He read
Aragorn says how it ends.
Oh,
in the fellowship.
Okay, let's just leave
it. Oh my gosh. Anyways, I asked this question very specifically.
Yeah, go ahead. Okay, you're making a point.
Because I have thoughts
I have
about his point.
Yeah.
You want to save your thoughts to the
I
end?
I can save my
go
thoughts
ahead.
To the end.
I just think that, like, I mean, the history, like, of all the races definitely, like, dictates how a lot of them treat each other. Like, there is a lot of history with, like, betrayal and, like, dishonesty. Because it's, like, even in the Silmarillion, like, the dwarfs were just kind of kept to themselves, but they weren't really, like, enemies with the elves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Until, like, some stuff went down. And so it's, like, seeing, though, that be brought through in The Hobbit, like, especially if The Hobbit's your first, like, book reading, you don't know any of that. You know, like, mm-hmm. and this was the first book that he read, like, that wrote to people, mm-hmm. like, and actually published.
Actually
so it was
got
like,
published, yeah.
It was like people were just like, oh, I guess the hobbits hate the dwarfs. And I mean, I guess the elves hate the dwarfs, or the, yeah. the dwarfs hate the hobbits. And then also the men, like, what's going on with that dynamic? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. Like, I yeah. just think that, in my personal opinion, he handles it well. Like, mm-hmm. and the fact that he actually creates, like, tension, like, there's actually, like, hatred for the other
Yes,
races.
But I think, like, because some people have complained that Tolkien has a racist bent,
mm-hmm.
But I think that there's a massive difference between what he's doing in those books, because these people aren't, in his books, they're not angry or hate each other for hating each other's sake, like a lot of our racism in the world today is. It's there are things that happened in the past that put our peoples at odds with each other. Like
right.
every one of them, there's like a legitimate reason, although the dwarf and elvish animosities tend to be complete huge massive misunderstandings when you actually dig into them, as most conflicts are. But I think that you can see some interesting things in Tolkien's work. I do not believe at all, having read everything I've read so far, that he at all is a racist, because what you find is, like, the dwarves and the elves find a, like, specifically Battle of Five Armies, they all find a way to join together and fight a greater enemy, and then they're all friends afterwards.
Yeah.
That's not how racism as our world understands
down.
Racism.
But it's like the,
yeah, yeah.
the dynamic that he like puts into each individual race. It's like elves were created to stay on Middle Earth and like be part of Middle Earth and like live for forever, as long as forever is on Middle Earth.
Sure.
Seeing what happens. Whereas the men were created to like live and die, and then the elves don't get to know what happens next to them. Like, they get to go be somewhere else, and mm-hmm. there's another thing for them after Middle Earth is gone,
mm-hmm.
or what, however that works.
Yeah.
But that's basically that. Whereas the dwarfs, though, weren't created in the same way as the elves and the men. And I'm not going to remember any of the names, 'cause I just don't remember names,
yeah.
but,
Aule.
Yeah. So he creates them. and then is reprimanded, but out of his heart, like in the way that he reacts, like he is allowed for the actual dwarfs to be like brought into creation, but just after the first and second born.
Mm-hmm. Barry or the says, first, like, the children of my choice and the children of my adoption.
Yeah. So, but it's just like there's very hard distinctions between just those three races. Like, that I mean, personally, like, I don't think that any of us on this world could understand how any of them feel towards each other, because it's like a human having to have relations with an elf that you're like, yeah, you've lived 3,000 yeah years.
I think like with right, all
it's
things,
not the same.
It's it like it does thing not compare, right. Or like dwarfs that like even just like the way that people are blessed, especially like the high elves that actually mm-hmm got to live like mm-hmm under the blessing of the trees and actually were taught by the Valar. It's like there's even animosity between different races or different sects with inside the elves themselves. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I just my thoughts is like, I just don't think that like we could even like yeah comprehend, mm-hmm, like if I was a dwarf and I'm like, oh, who are these people coming over from yeah far away and they have all of this magic? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, I don't think
he, yeah, he tends to do this thing too. I've kind of noticed where, with non, you know, human races, right, in the Lord of the Rings, they tend to be more like black and white in their nature, in the sense that, like, yes, there's conflicts and things between the elves, and it depends on which story, because the Silmarillion's like a whole nother thing, but it's like, you know, when he'll talk about the dwarves, it's like, he talks about, like, dwarves are like this, and there's descriptions of, like, how they act and behave and things that they do, and it's fairly, like, contain, like, these are the kind of things that dwarves, these are dwarves things, these are hobbits things, these are kind of elves things. I feel like men is where he gets a little bit more into the like dynamics, because of the fact that it's like they're the same as us, whereas these other creatures, like to your point, it's like they're literally a different thing.
Yeah.
So they act in a more like monopolar way than humans do. Like, they're less like just all over the place than humans are. They're more like true to who they actually are in their nature. And then second point, I feel like about like race in The Lord of the Rings is that I think sometimes what Tolkien's trying to do with like specific creatures or things is they represent ideas more than they do actual people groups.
And that's my point. And this is why I brought this up, because mm-hmm race is a big, like, people
leading like, question.
Who, right. Well, people who criticize people who criticize Tolkien will love to use the race agenda,
yep,
as a means of criticism. But their mistake is reading on Tolkien's, what Tolkien means when he says race, reading on to like, oh, this is an analogy for what I hear when I hear the word race is what you meant when you said race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As people think. Yeah. Right. And so they see race, orc, elf, and they think, oh, he means white good, black bad.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's first assumption, is that's what he means at all by race. Mm-hmm. And I think rather, and I think this is so clear, especially with the Battle of the Five Armies, is that he's using race distinctions to, I think, comment on the necessity of cooperation in mm-hmm the war against the Kingdom of Darkness.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there is dissension among brothers. Right. Like, there mm-hmm is dissension among the church. There will be disagreements. There will be splits. There will be schisms. Yet we must all be united together mm-hmm against.
So, yeah. So what you're telling me now here is that instead of race, they're denominations. So the elves are the Catholics, the men are the Protestants.
No, they're all... Oh, God. All,
you are going way too deep here.
Way too deep. Which way is too deep. And Tolkien was Catholic, so they're all Catholic.
They're all Catholics. Okay. I was just thinking... Like,
where are you going with this?
No, I just mean in terms of like...
There's also the idea that like Tolkien never even thought that deep, and he just like yes, wrote a book.
Well, exactly. And I think like to your point...
Yeah,
well, not against your point, right?
It was my point to joke, guys.
Yeah, I know
I'm sorry.
I know it was. But like, again... Like, this is one of the mistakes, is that it's not allegorical.
Yes, but right? It's applicable.
And it's applicable. But it, so it's not allegorical in the sense that you should take one thing in the book and correspond it directly to one direct thing in the real world. Yeah. Right? It's like elves are this. You know what I mean? Right. Dwarves are this. No. It's like, no, they can represent like a concept like that is saying, related to right. that.
You like know what yeah. I mean? This. But, like, right. His yes. worldview is very much reflective of or the books are very much reflective of his worldview.
Yeah.
And I think, and he did that on purpose. So it's like, it's.
Well, yeah, that's what he says, I think, in the letter at the beginning of the Fellowship of the Ring. He's talking about how he doesn't want it to be seen as allegorical, but he says along the lines of, but this is applicable. You'll mm-hmm. find it applies, the things in the story apply. And I think you have a really good point about how people misinterpret what he would have said as race, as him trying to distinguish between the idea of what the elves represent, the idea of what the dwarves represent mm-hmm. or the men represent, and not just like, you know, immortality, mortal. It's more, I think, like, I don't know, the elves have this long, they represent this longevity, this history, this tradition, this beauty, and this care for all things living and good. And you have the dwarves that have a good bit of longevity, but they're more like industrious and building, and they're gifted with their hands. And then the men are, you know, just out there taking dominion. Like yeah. they're exploring and building and trying to overcome, and they know they're mortal, so they have their histories and stuff. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that's an interesting point. And I think people are wrong when they want to peg him as a racist yeah, because of those crazy. Types of things.
That's a good question.
I just don't know if I've seen like Tolkien hate.
Yeah,
there are a few authors out there who are very anti-Tolkien. Okay, because
I'm just like maybe oblivious to it, or like all of my For You pages are just like Tolkien worship. Tolkien,
yeah.
Like,
those are people who you can and should respect. Anyone else is just their jokes.
Who wrote that one?
All right, let's go.
All right.
That was Gabe.
That was Gabe.
He had to read it for me. All right,
here we go, guys. About to get hot and heavy.
We're not yet.
Uh-oh, here it comes. Here it comes. Crack the knuckle.
What is your favorite section of the book? Which we kind of already touched on that.
Yeah, a little bit.
Right. So maybe we just remember your answers from the what's your favorite section earlier.
What's the guy's name?
Bayorn. Yeah.
I'm not sure that's your favorite section.
It is. I just can't remember the names of anybody yet.
It's true. He can't remember my name.
I don't remember
anyone. Don't take it personally. I've lived with him longer.
I just remember ideas.
Have.
All right. Anyways, what's the question? All right.
So remember your favorite section. And then if applicable, would you switch the book section with what was in the movies?
Movie so about this.
Another way of saying it would be like, what would you do differently, or was it adapted well?
Like if it was Beorn's thing, I'd rather be copy paste, just replace the whole thing, just Beorn.
From the book to the book. I agree 100%.
I would have rather had that, and that's just my opinion. Because I reading the book and just like, oh, this is just great. Like everything about this is awesome. And then the movie is kind of like, this is still good. I'm glad you put it there. Like it would have sucked if he just took that out. Yeah. But like, yeah.
Well, have you seen the extended version? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, because they have that whole scene with them all coming out in that funky way.
Yeah, but it's not how they do get in the book. There.
No.
Yeah, and it feels unnecessary.
Well, they're being chased in the movie. Anyways.
Okay, quick.
What's yours? Because
what did I say? The Eagles?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't remember
that
exactly.
That is almost copy-paste. I'm not kidding.
It's not.
Not
it's,
that when he sees the Eagles.
Bilbo gets knocked out, and then he's not in the fight anymore.
Yeah.
In the book.
So
right, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so what I'll say is this, because I had given like basically two answers. The party at the beginning of An Unexpected Journey.
I think it's perfect.
I think they couldn't really done it much better.
Yeah.
They killed
it. They nailed it. Perfect. Like it's a little bit longer, like the song's longer in the book.
Knives and...
Yeah.
What's the song?
The knives bend the forks.
That's what Bilbo Baggins hates.
Yeah, and like that was like awesome. And they introduced the dwarves, and one thing that I like that Peter Jackson did for the helpfulness of the audience is like he differentiates all the dwarves so you can like make a connection with all of them. Yeah, that one. And so I would say like that I would not change really anything about the movie other than like could there be more of it? is my only thing.
Yeah.
And then I would say the Battle of Five Armies, well, this is a whole nother discussion.
It was perfect.
I think that he gets...
The extended cut.
The extended cut gets all of the correct essences from the book into the movie and does a very good job of it.
100%.
There are some extra things There's a collection of things that are then added on top of that.
Yeah.
That pretty much suck. And that's my take.
See, hey, we have a 50-50. We have a 50-50 split here, honestly, because you and I are pretty much in agreement.
We can bring that up later if we need to.
I think that...
Bonus episode.
Yeah. I think that Riddles in the Dark was great.
Oh, dude. Yeah. Perfect.
I think it was awesome.
Perfect.
The only thing is I would have liked to have seen them just shoot it differently to where it's actually dark. Mm-hmm. I think that would have added.
I think there was a way you could do it to where you could capture that scene.
I think there's a way you could do it to capture the kind of eldritch, confused, unknown horror of what's happening in that scene where Bilbo like doesn't know what the heck he's talking to. Mm. He just sees his eyes.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't really have a clear picture of what Gollum is. You just know he's this thing that's been tortured, that's just slimy and murders things in the dark. First. Like it's you.
Yeah.
It's so weird. Mm-hmm. Right. So I feel like I would have liked to have seen them capture that kind of darkness creepiness. I agree with that sentiment,
but I also think that you would be hard pressed to do that in the movie because Tolkien is describing the cave and the island and the little boat he has. So you as the reader are getting all these other things in the dark.
Yeah. But I think Jackson was probably trying to put in it.
Mm-hmm. So my thing, I think the only thing I would have liked with the song, because that was what I was saying, was is that they would have done the whole song.
I agree.
Because that song, we were listening to it as we were setting up. Mm-hmm. It is one of the most epically done. I love that song, the way they did that in the movie. And to have the whole thing, I could listen to that for hours.
At least in the extended version. Yeah. Like, that was one thing I was like, man, it'd be really cool if they recorded the whole thing and then they just cut it for the theatrical.
Because when you listen to The Hobbit read by Andy Serkis, he sings it all in the same music they use for the song in the movie. Mm-hmm. So you get the whole song played out and Andy Serkis does a good job singing it. It's like, man, this is so good. So that's my only thing. With that scene.
Here's what I think we do. I think we pause questions and go ahead and have the movie conversation and let that end it because we're already like an hour deep.
What do you think, podcast man? It's your podcast.
You have another question in there you want to go?
Well, I definitely do. But like, I personally think we should just like rapid fire them. And then like, if we have time.
We're not going to.
Let's. I want to see what's in here. So let's try to rapid fire. Yeah, and if we can get through it in the next 5 minutes.
So you can cut them up, right?
What is your favorite location in the book and why?
Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna go first.
Rapid fire, Gabe. Come on.
Come on, man. Faster.
What is your favorite location?
Along.
What is your favorite location in the book and why?
You said you go first.
Could you
go
read it any slower?
You can't.
We don't have to bully him. Come on.
Okay.
I just want to live in a hobbit hole. That's all I want in life.
That's your favorite location? Shire.
Yes, because obviously.
The Elf's Kingdom in Mirkwood.
Yeah, you would say that. I like that. Elven sprite.
You see how tall he is?
Woodland.
I'm not that tall.
Woodland.
You're taller than the rest of us.
Guy is the living embodiment of a dwarf.
His D&D character.
You know what's funny? Y'all's Joel dynamic quick. Is really like that. You said Mirkwood. Erebor.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's real. Nice. That's good.
Erebor restored, though.
Yeah. with the dragon.
With the dragon, yeah.
All right, I'll steal Joss's answer from earlier, and I'll say Beorn's house.
Mm. Yeah, nice. There we go.
All right,
there
next
go.
Question.
Okay. Not this guy read it. I wrote that question, by the way.
We didn't even guess. Yeah.
Okay.
Salty.
This is a movie question. What in the frick? Oh, okay. Nice. You could just literally just rapid fire this one. Okay. At what age is it okay to introduce stories with violence to children?
Okay, that doesn't have anything to do with The Hobbit.
Yes, it does.
No, The Hobbit's written for kids, so it's approved.
But at what age is it okay to introduce the Hobbit? To
Dude, I'm going to be reading it when they're in the womb, and then when they're out of the womb, mm-hmm. like just, yeah. And I'm going to try to do
so like as soon as possible.
Yeah, you know, there's war, death.
I mean, at what point?
I'm reading them the Bible.
Yeah, at what point is the gospel appropriate for children? Yeah. I think
I'm gonna do the picture version.
I think there's a way. I think there's a way to introduce the idea of conflict, but yeah. also restoration and victory.
Dude, one of the mm-hmm. earliest memories of my child is David and Goliath, and David takes his head off.
Yeah. Right. There's a difference between violence and gore for the sake of.
I think that
gore.
Yes. We all answered. Yes. Oh, did yeah. you answer?
Nice. Well, no, but this is my question. So that's why I was glad that you brought the Bible thing up because that was my thing.
That was your
age. I don't know the specific age. I think it depends on the kid. I think you just know when it's right to tell them things and not tell them things.
I think as far
things,
as
but,
violence goes, mm-hmm. it's like...
They understand aggression and conflict pretty quickly.
Yeah, because like,
I don't think I'm going to try to, you know, weigh the gravity of like the dragon being the dragon, or mm-hmm. like I'm not going to like be like, oh, no, you need to know how spooky.
Yeah, like I'm not watching Saving Private Ryan with my 3-year-old, but right. like they're going
to
have
pausing
a
it to be like, okay, you right. see how he just right. got brutally
we
destroyed.
We don't do that.
Let's
to
rewind
people,
the
right?
knife. Exactly.
They get it. Yeah. You know.
Oh but, gosh, yeah.
they
no.
get it.
Well, that's but, one of the things is that I feel like kids. To this extent, right, is it's like they get introduced to things. It's like some things don't click in their head,
yeah.
right? They don't make the connection. So it's like, don't make it for them. They yeah. will make it on their own eventually.
So rapid fire.
But yeah, rapid fire.
Right. So is there another
next?
Question?
That's, this is the, we're on the last
the
one.
The last one? All right, let's go.
So is the movie question? All right, let's have it. Let's,
yep.
let's
have at ye.
Strap Who, on whose the was that boys? Last one? Was that yours?
Mine.
Okay. We're going to war.
You woodlands, right?
Mine. Now, real quick, as we get into this, we need to be a little structured and civilized because yep. we are definitely...
No, when I get to 11:30, I'm just leaving.
Okay.
Joel and I will talk the whole time because we'll be civilized and then you guys cannot talk.
You'll How be about? Siblings? That's cute.
All right. Go ahead. Read it.
Corrective hearing. do you think the movies The Hobbit should be renamed The Dwarves as the movies seem to be more about them where the book is more about Bilbo?
Well, that is a very one-sided question.
I also don't think that's true at all. I think the movies very much make Bilbo the
I
main character.
I began
like, Bilbo's the
writing the question when asking, can I write a leading question?
Oh, I didn't hear that.
Said, yes.
I didn't hear that. Okay.
Yeah, fair. I think Bilbo is very much the protagonist in the films, and I think the other characters are developed more because it's a movie.
Okay, this is a joke, but Legolas is definitely the protagonist. No, I'm joking.
okay.
So my opinion is yes and no. Because I think in the first movie, The Unexpected Journey, it is about Bilbo,
mm-hmm.
but then they flesh out and develop the story of the dwarves even more. So okay. it's like, there you go, sweet spot. The second movie, for about 85% of it, Bilbo completely disappears. Like is irrelevant. He's there sometimes, but there's nothing happening about him, which is my opinion too. Is the second one is the worst one, but it's actually my
Minus
opinion.
The
second one is actually
20,
a bad movie,
minutes.
Except for the last like bit with Smaug.
Yeah,
which is awesome.
I think I could agree
I
with
know,
that.
He,
with that
he's
second
kind
one.
Of big, like with getting them out of Mirkwood and the whole spider thing. Like he's.
I will say that I do love the barrel scene
still,
in the movie.
Yeah, but
I
the
think
thing
well
is
done.
Is that they actually I think. And so I think it's partially relative to the book because I think the book, like the movie actually like almost like, I don't know, I feel like it makes Bilbo less heroic in certain instances. Like they take out the whole thing about him throwing rocks and antagonizing the spiders.
Yeah, I like
so
that.
So it takes
in the
out
book.
His cleverness.
Like yeah.
And he just stabs
he
him. This, yeah.
Yeah.
It in the barrel scene, he just stumbles and hits the lever
That's
and then
true.
Falls into the yeah. water instead of him like, actually being in there like talking to them and going back and forth and coming up with this plan and then like all of a sudden he's in charge of the party.
But yeah. I think you see that though a little more in the movies in Battle of Five Armies. Like I think
And he, then I was gonna say I think the Battle
think
of Five
they,
Armies
they
brings
they
it
recover.
Back some.
Like he's not the bumbling buffoon.
Now obviously when you take a book that is smaller than each individual book of the Lord of the Rings and you try to make it into three 3-hour movies,
mm-hmm.
you're probably going to have to fluff and add and do things. But like, in my opinion, the book so richly shows a painting of who Bilbo is.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And the movies fail in comparison. Yeah. Because they paint a picture more so of the party as a whole, which they include Bilbo in the party.
I think they
put Bilbo at the same level is almost like as Thorin and as like some of the other leading dwarfs. Like they put Bilbo there's basically like Bilbo is one of them now, versus the actual Hobbit movies actually just being like it's about Bilbo. That's my opinion, to where it's like they could have just said this is like, you know, the dwarfs of the Lonely Mountain. Like they could have titled the movie that versus the Hobbit, in my opinion, because it's like Bilbo gets to go with the team.
Do you see the steam coming out of Gabe's ears?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No, but that's just my
Joel,
opinion.
You give your thoughts.
I want to give my thoughts. Okay. Because again, you guys have read these way before I had.
To a dwarf. So yeah, he's getting a fifth written.
Enough of Merc.
The antagonism is real.
Go.
No. So you guys had read the books way before me. You guys had probably actually seen the movies way before I did, because I watched Lord of the Rings when I was little, but then I just refused to watch The Hobbit when I got older. I had watched The Hobbit maybe 2 or 3 weeks before I started reading the book. And I had watched the extended cuts for the second and third movie. Couldn't find it for the first one, so we just watched the regular. So it was very fresh in my mind. I have read a lot of books that have been turned into movies. This was one of the best I have ever seen, in the sense of, in the sense, is that's not to say it's perfect at all.
Yeah.
Okay. It just in the sense of capturing the main themes, the main ideas, even some of the main scenes throughout the book. Peter Jackson did a wonderful job painstakingly making sure, make sure that's in there. And I told Gabe and probably told Andrew, I think I told this to you, and I know we disagree on it. It's fine. But it was like,
it's fine.
Watching the movies was like watching a third person's perspective of the story. Like you have the book written from the, you know, Tolkien's perspective, how he intended it. Watching the movie is like somebody else was there and watching it, and it's their perspective and they're telling you their perspective of the story, and it's their details that they're wanting to highlight, but they're not changing the fundamentals of the story.
Which I have a few thoughts on that. I think that what Justice was saying earlier, the problem with that is when the story is called The Hobbit and you're adapting the story about The Hobbit, and so you need to keep The Hobbit at the main focal point of the story consistently throughout the movies, which
I'm
he's
not I'm not disagreeing
but.
There are problems.
Two is that I can't remember what my second point was, okay. so I will come back to it,
think about it
after I say my third point.
Because I have one more thing I want to say about it.
Well, so
just my thoughts
my
on
third
the whole thing.
Point is that there is
my second one. Go to the third.
Yeah. So my third, now second point is that there are things though that like he second point. I remember. So
you had to get he had to
just let him talk. Let him talk. Let him talk.
You could have just been like, I can't remember the second one. I'll just go to the third one, and then you'd be like, oh, and my third point. When
yes,
you
so now my
what
second.
He could have
but
done
I'm going
better.
Back to the
now
first.
Let him do it. Now let him just talk.
That's because I don't care about
original second.
Original second. Is I'm about to lose it again.
Oh my God.
So I do agree with you on your point about the other perspective, is that I think what the movies do is they, Peter Jackson was trying to incorporate the larger story of The Hobbit within the rest of Tolkien's works.
Yes.
So like the stuff that's in the indexes, but that's not in The Hobbit book,
right.
And the stuff
yes.
that's mentioned in The Fellowship of the Ring, but that's not in the book. And so he's trying to like, take all of that and then incorporate it as if you're watching from like more of a thousand.
It's a completed
view,
story,
right? Where it's all of it, not just Bilbo's perspective.
Yeah.
And I think I appreciate that because it's like, that's almost a way to a theatrical audience to convey all of those things right. to them, not right. just what's in the book. Right.
Right.
Yeah. So I like that. Third and, point. Okay. Sorry, Gabe. No, this is a quicker one.
I do have one more
is
thing.
Is there to a no, few talk. Very okay. specific.
We can go to other, everyone else. Yeah.
There are a few very specific things, though, that he changes that, like, I mean, talking about hyper specific, but they just drive me nuts because they feel like they're changed for Legless. No reason. No, that's not it.
Okay.
The main thing is the way that, like, Tolkien very painstakingly, explicitly describes the colorfulness of the dwarves, like armor and clothes and crafts and things.
That's fair.
Totally muted in the movies. That drives me nuts. There's also a very specific thing, also has to do with color. There's a scene in Mirkwood where Bilbo goes up in the trees and he takes a breath of fresh air. In the book, he describes the butterflies and he's like, and they were black. And he's like, and they weren't like dark purple. They were literally black.
Yeah.
And in the movie, they're blue.
I know.
And I'm like, I paused the movie and I like ranted for 15 minutes at my wife. And then she's like, all right, you done? Can we watch the movie again? But I was just like, it doesn't make any sense. Like
that's such an easy thing to get right.
Yeah. Because it's so, and it's like, it's not an important detail, but it's so explicitly written where he's like, they were not even blue. They were black. And then he's like, no, I'm going to make them blue.
This is where storytelling is important. And I think telling,
telling it correctly is important.
No. I think telling it well. And I think that's a point where I think
he willingly
sacrificed that detail in the text for the effect of what's supposed to be achieved by Bilbo's freshness, right? Because if you poke your head and the beauty and freshness and contrast that's supposed to be met between the bleak grayness and death of the under the canopy world versus the life and beauty and freshness that's supposed to be found outside the world. If you see black butterflies, that doesn't do...
They look like
that
moths.
Doesn't do the yeah, contrast but I think justice. The thing is that... In that scene where Bilbo goes up,
they're supposed to still be a symbol of the death. That's still so
right. Well, the thing is, that's the thing is, the scene in the book when Bilbo goes up is not a scene of like this hope and life that's above. It's like desperation.
Yep.
Because they can't see the mountain. He can't see the mountain in the book, whereas he sees it and gives him hope in the movie.
But he can see the lake. But in the book, he can see the lake.
So it's like this thing of like desperation of like, oh my gosh, like. There's just nothing. Everything's corrupted.
But there's
a little bit of
yeah.
Anyways, as far as like that's such a highly specific thing. Detail.
Because I could go about how like the dwarfs weren't mad to go to Rivendell, like in the book.
Mm. Yeah,
and they weren't mad to go and actually even talk to the elves and Mirkwood. Like they weren't against it. They were like, okay, yeah, let's go. Like food and stay, shelter, yeah, cool. Gandalf.
Yeah,
and this will lead me into my points because I have very strong opinions on this, and I think this is
as we all do.
I think this is where people who heavily criticize the movies, I think, either. I just think it comes down to a misunderstanding of how you can handle this specific content. This book is not this book.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
They're two completely different works of fiction.
Oh, for sure.
And as such, you cannot expect the same degree of textual adherence that you'd expect the Lord of the Rings movies to convey.
I think we all agree with that.
Yeah. Because, right, and so my point being...
I don't know if I agree with it. You can't expect it. Why can't I expect it?
Well, because I think you have to take into consideration the dauntingness of this task, because you have to be able to both make a movie and a series of movies that capture the essence, like the magic,
the flavor. That's most important.
And this is what they did right. And this is why I get so frustrated with people who love to criticize the movies. Because all they'll do is they'll just harp on them for not being Lord of the Rings. But my point is like, okay, but what did they get right? Did they capture the magic and the vibe and the flavor of what the Hobbit Hole was supposed to be?
Yeah.
Did they capture the essence of that meeting? Did they capture the essence of every single scene that leads up to like the victory at the Battle of Five Armies? And at every single point, they nailed it. And you can nitpick little details, but I wish they didn't do this. I hate the fluff here. Yeah, I don't like that either. But but they both managed to encapsulate the seriousness and the levity and humor that this book actually has.
Yeah.
Because this book is not a serious book. Mm-hmm. And if you make the movies, trying to make them serious movies without a bit of joke and fun, like then you're not being faithful to the source material. And I think writing a bit of taking itself not so seriously, right? Like it's not supposed to be Lord of the Rings. It can be a little Marvel-esque. Like it can have bits of
that's
humor
a little
and,
harsh
and lightness. But no, okay, no, so, it's okay, the sorry,
back to the, I appreciate
back
that.
Back to the
I
question
really
though, no. That was
you're
written.
Not allowed to watch people's hate videos before you do another episode with it on this.
Okay, but back to
I think I had to because I had to prepare myself.
Mm-hmm. I mean, oh,
go
hold,
ahead
hold
with
on.
Your points.
So like my point had nothing to do against the movies being bad. I love the movies and I'm happy that they made them because it's like I get to go watch The Hobbit.
Yeah.
Like and I'm happy. But like nothing you just said there had anything to do with like my specific question on should they have like because of how they made it renamed it because it no. wasn't the focal point was not on Bilbo.
I do. Mm-hmm. I completely disagree.
Okay.
So I think the movies were about Bilbo, but I think there's a case to be made, like especially like as you brought up in the second one, how he's in and out. Sure, messed up there, but the third one, I think he's really the focal point. But also, again, to your point, Jackson is taking all the other information from all the other books that go back and talk about The Hobbit, and he's putting all that into this. I don't know about all of it, but he's putting a ton of it in there. Yeah. I do want to make this is going to be my closing thoughts on this whole thing. Okay, I loved. The guy that they got to play Bilbo in the movies, I think
Martin
did.
Martin, I can never think he of Bilbo did, and not think Martin.
Yeah, he did such a phenomenal job. I remember when I watched the movies for the first time, I thought, wow, this is, Bilbo's annoying. I can't, like, this is really bad. And then I got to the books, I was like, oh, wow, he's supposed to be that way. Mm-hmm. You know what? He actually did a phenomenal job.
Another reason the movies nailed it
is
because they nailed the characters. They hit the nail on
the head. Thing I didn't like is how Lake Town in the movies was portrayed as this dump. But in the book, it's actually a thriving town, and it's a very wealthy town. So that's one thing I didn't care about.
Yeah, I don't like the way that they. I like some parts of the way that they depict it in the movie, but
I mean, there's.
I just
it's got
can't
its, it's got
stand
its
Alfred
feeling. Yeah, no, he's all that I can't stand
in it way too much.
So you have that, and then I was gonna say like
the freaking orcs.
A part of the movie. That I actually like better. You can shoot me if you want to.
Shoot you?
Yeah. No. There's two things. I liked that they're being chased and hunted by orcs throughout the movies.
Yeah.
It adds this element of we got to hurry. I liked it. Okay.
Honestly, that's my most hated thing about the books.
I'm sorry.
Or about the movie.
About the books.
About the books.
It's like, I agree with you. He should have put that in
I
the
books.
I hate
having tension in my movies.
Okay. So the other...
I hate having
I think the
excitement.
Books, I think the book had enough tension and excitement. I think that like the fact...
my last...
The fact that you were chased by dorks or...
dorks.
You can tell it's late.
Yeah.
The fact that they were chased by
orcs
and dorks that weren't even in the books
yep.
throughout the whole three movies, to me,
you can bleep.
I'm gonna have to bleep that. Maybe we'll see. All right, so my last two things that I actually liked about in the movies, I liked. This is another one. Hot take. I like the female elf.
Oh my god! Oh my god!
Even Gabe cannot defend.
See,
Tarly.
That's my second least favorite thing.
Joel's
a sucker for romance. Joel's like, have you seen Pride and Prejudice?
That's where the line has all right.
I'm about to redeem myself.
Why
for you,
Gabe?
Why can
you hate that, but not hate the fact that the orcs that aren't even there are just there the freaking time?
Because it makes logical sense within the story.
Does it though?
Yes,
I think nobody knows.
Sorry,
nobody knows about this journey.
Okay,
nobody like.
Okay. Stop.
You just poop on parties. That's all you do. if there's a party anywhere near you, you're
Gabe
just
like
do
bad
that.
CGI
guys,
works.
My last point. We're gonna be wrapping it up. So y'all get your last points ready to go. This is my last point. I liked that in the movie throughout. every movie, the reason the dwarves are going back to Erebor isn't just to get their gold. They're trying to reclaim the mountain for their homeland. That's in the movies.
In the books.
No, in the books. I got to when they got to Erebor, and I remember sitting there going, why are they there? I literally had to ask that because the whole thing is about Bilbo being a legit burglar to go in and get some of the gold for them. That's the whole reason. But
no,
once...
No.
Hold on. Once Smaug gets killed and they reclaim it, they start making a big deal about we've just reclaimed our homeland, and I appreciate that, but they make it a much deeper theme
you know why?
In the movies.
Because they make the book about the Hobbit and the movies about the dwarves.
That's an argument this to be made, but I'm just saying I really like that in the movies. And
you
I like
Toriel too. I'm on Joel's team.
All right.
You like what?
I know
you're not.
Who?
Tari.
The female
this guy
elf.
With the names.
Yeah. All right. So somebody else give their
I
closing
even
thoughts.
I remember that one.
Oh, man. Holy cow.
You don't have to go as long as I did. I went long.
I'm not going to lie. I have no... You took the wind out of my sails, Joel, that one. I've got nothing left, boys. I just was so aghast by that.
I cannot believe I have finally found a way to shut Gabe up.
I mean, I just... I don't even know what to say to that.
Oh, dude, like, I found multiple ways to shut Gabe up.
Okay, anyways. Anyways, closing thoughts.
Closing thought, go ahead.
I enjoyed the movies more watching the extended versions than I did watching the theatrical cuts.
Yep.
Hear, hear.
Go figure.
It's not ridiculous.
I think that books and movies are different mediums.
Yep.
However, I do think that if you're going to make a movie adaptation of a book, the primary focus needs to be communicating the exact story of the book, not your own version of it, which I think Peter Jackson generally does overall. That would be my overall take.
I trust him
more than anybody
more than
else.
Anyone.
That's
fair.
Yeah.
But that's like, you know, that's not saying much given our other adaptations that we've been given.
Oh yeah, no. Oh, that's true. Yeah. No. Yeah.
Actually,
yeah.
That is saying much.
I don't even consider that to be an adaptation. I just think that's
come out Rop.
That's $1 billion fan fiction. That's what that is.
Yeah.
That's not...
I mean, fair.
Yeah. Clickbait.
Also, final thoughts on the book as a whole is I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Agreed.
I cannot wait to read it to my son.
Yes.
And that's I think that it's good, like man. A perfect fictional narrative that for the purpose of stimulating your imagination into thinking about ideas bigger than yourself.
Both as a child and as an adult.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure. Agreed. Like reading these as an adult, dude, I've loved just setting my imagination ablaze again. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well said. Do you have any closing thoughts? No.
Yeah. I love it. It's one of my favorite books. It brings me a lot of joy. And I think the movies are baller. I'm very much entertained by them. I love them.
Nice.
All right, Jesses.
Well said. Baller movies.
I want to make it clear. I do like the books better. Just want to make that clear. Go ahead.
Yeah.
I think the books are baller. I think the movies are baller. Like,
everybody's a baller.
Yeah.
We're all ballers.
You're all ballers.
Ballin's a baller.
Ballin's a baller.
Yeah, that's it. No, I'm joking. No, I do think that, like, I'm going to enjoy reading this to my kids and, like, being able to, like, do the different voices and actually put, like, emotion into, like, Gollum and, like, that scene and tension. And, that'll be fun. But, like, I do think it is also a good introduction into a glimpse of what, even though it's fictional, but of a story of what life could look like. And that it's like, it's passing down like their traditions of human, of yes, there are dragons and there is adventure and there is treasure, but it's like, you actually have to go out onto the road and actually experience it.
I think
that like from a young age of them just even seeing the glimpse of that in a book is like, this is human tradition. You're part of this.
Yeah.
And I think that that is like one of the coolest things about Tolkien's work is encapsulating like actual human tradition inside of fantasy world.
Yeah. And what's Gandalf's line there? The world isn't in your books. It's out there.
Mm-hmm.
And he points Frodo to the window. He says that Bilbo.
Yeah.
Although I will start with the Silmarillion first. And no, I'm joking. I'm joking.
Wow, that's heavy for somebody in the womb. Well, guys, I really appreciate y'all doing this. Mm-hmm. Sorry to disappoint you, Gabe. Not really, but I am.
I can definitely say, Joel, without a doubt, this is the most off the rails podcast you've ever done.
Yeah, I'm going to have to do some editing.
This is why we need Andrew.
Yes.
I think we would have said the same thing.
I would have said the exact same thing.
Yeah. I think Cam would have.
I would have.
Anyways, don't say it again, please.
Yep.
Gabe, what'd you say again?
On the rails.
Let's go. All right. So, anyways, thank you so much again, guys. I really appreciate it. I love the book. I love you guys. I love being able to do this, and I can't wait for the next one.
Love you, Joel.
Thanks, guys.
Love you, Joel.
Well, wow. Well, thanks again for listening, guys. I hope you liked it. If you did, we'd appreciate if you'd give us a like, subscribe, hit that bell for notifications. If you're on Apple or Amazon, give us a 5-star review. We'd appreciate it. Oh, and please do share it if you found it at least a little funny. But yeah, thanks again for listening. God bless y'all. Thank you for listening to the Free Man's Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe for more great episodes coming your way soon. For more information and to sign up for exclusive bonus content, you can visit our website, thefreemanspodcast.com. Thanks again for listening, and God bless y'all.